Hi, I'm Mike Webb, and welcome to the ProPublica podcast. Way back when, on those rare occasions when I was being an imperfect child, my mom would tell me, if you don't stop doing that, I'm going to spank you. But mom loved me too much to ever actually spank me, so her warnings usually went unheeded. And so it seems a similar lesson applies for mortgage servicers, who have only helped a small percentage of troubled homeowners, in part because no enforcement mechanism is in place to make them help more people. ProPublica reporters Paul Keel and Oga Pierce just wrapped up a series that explains the, quote, fumbling efforts, unquote, of the Obama administration's loan modification program. The pair looked at the failed oversight of the program, how administration officials retreated from the president's campaign promises to help homeowners, as well as the dysfunctional machinery of the mortgage servicer industry. Another piece essentially served as a chartable or graphic representation of the data we use to assess the problems, and the last report looked at some of the proposals in the works that might offer more help for people. Keel and Pierce join us in the Storage Closet studio to talk about their work. Welcome.
Thanks.
Paul, we've been keeping an eye on the loan mod program for 2 years now. What had you left uncovered that made you decide we needed to do this five-part series?
Well, the idea was to give sort of an overarching view in a way that we hadn't in kind of our continuing coverage, which had been targeted at kind of more specific problems or general problems without kind of taking a step back and looking at the whole thing.
So now, if you're a struggling homeowner and you apply for a loan modification, what's the chance that you actually get one?
Well, what we found in crunching our numbers, which is part of our vast series of charts that we put up this week, which people seem to have appreciated, was that it runs about a little bit better than 1 in 5 of people who've applied have ended up with a permanent modification through this federal program. It gets a little bit better if you count people who've gotten a modification through their own servicer, which you get after you're rejected from the federal program, and those tend to be not quite as generous as the ones that the government offers.
And did you find that a lot of people were still kind of stuck in limbo getting the trial modifications? Olga?
Yeah, a lot of people are not in mods and have not been foreclosed on and so are still waiting to find out if they'll be able to stay in their homes or not. And it's a level of suffering that has been going on for a long time for a lot of homeowners that we've heard from.
Let's break down the stories that you did. For the lax oversight piece, was the administration under the impression that servicers would cooperate?
I think that there's some evidence to say, yeah, that they definitely didn't think that things would go the way they've gone, to put it that way. And it was always set up as a voluntary program. And I think there was the thinking that if you just set up the right incentives so that, you know, we give them a little bit of a government subsidy, and so it's more attractive to them to offer modification versus foreclose on someone, then, you know, through the magic of the market, things will turn out the way we'd like them to turn out, and that things haven't turned out that way.
Right. Well, is it true that the Treasury Department really doesn't have the power to punish the servicers who are wrongfully denying homeowners help?
The way this worked out was Congress didn't give them legislation that said, hey, go make a big program to help people get modifications. So you had this big TARP program, and they used that, which is $700 billion of money, to be the vehicle for this effort. And so the way they did it was, well, we have to get the banks to sign on to this because we don't have a law that's going to allow us to force them to do anything. So it was always a voluntary program. However, Treasury did make its own contracts. So they could have given themselves whatever power that they wanted to give. I mean, you know, whether banks would have agreed to sign up for a program that had clear consequences for them if they didn't follow through is another question. Clearly, they haven't taken steps now that it's been obvious for quite a long time that banks are not complying with the rules of the program to give themselves that stick that they're lacking currently. And so what we pointed out in the piece is that they could definitely take those steps, and those are steps they haven't taken.
If there's a contract and you don't live up to the terms.
Yeah, well, then someone has to say, hey, you're not living up to the terms. I'm going to do something about it.
Politically, it seems like there were millions of homeowners who were eligible to be helped, and money had already been approved to help them. So why would President Obama walk back on his campaign pledges to help these people?
Well, it's not entirely clear what happened. We did hear from several sources that there was a lot of sort of policy ambivalence inside the Obama administration, the strongest measure to help homeowners would have involved bankruptcy judges and letting modifications be done in bankruptcy courts.
The cram down that you guys
cram down, right? It appears that, you know, many people in Obama's administration and many people in general felt that maybe that wasn't the best idea, that it might have ramifications for the banking industry, or if you listen to the more hysterical voices, ramifications for the future of democracy. I think that's part of the reason that they ended up with a solution that wasn't the toughest solution. I don't think there was not a desire to help people, but I think there was also a concern about spending taxpayer dollars to help people who were seen as deserving and not spending taxpayer dollars to help your irresponsible neighbor who has, you know, 7 motorcycles and 2 SUVs when you have, you know, responsibly been paying your mortgage all the years and saving your money in case you lost your job.
So the politics weren't so clear cut.
Yeah. It was not clear to everyone, especially early on, that the people who needed help were people who were victims of circumstance and not people who had just made poor decisions.
Okay. Now, you wrote that the industry was dysfunctional, but it seems like they were really just protecting their bottom lines. And most people would say that's the exact function of their business. So what's dysfunctional about that?
I mean, you could argue that their dysfunction is very functional in the sense that it saves them money. But
you mean in the terms of actually helping homeowners?
Well, just in terms of, so the way they have been dysfunctional is that they have thrown inadequate resources at what is a gargantuan problem. And the dysfunction we're talking about is, you know, we interviewed people like 20-year-olds who were kind of thrown onto the phones and, you know, they're the ones in the front line. They haven't been trained adequately. They're dealing with these systems that are kind of a mess and kind of attached onto these really old, you know, sometimes like people were saying 1980s type mainframe type computers, you know, Microsoft DOS and all that kind of stuff. And so they're kind of set up to fail in a way. And the homeowner, when they call into their bank, doesn't know that, obviously. And so it's been dysfunction kind of all the way down the line, from the 20-year-old answering your phone with inadequate training to, you know, the documentation systems that they have, these fax systems, like it's who knows where it goes, it's scanned, it's sent to the wrong file. And then, you know, as we've written about before, sometimes a dysfunction that leads to you're talking to your bank and you're saying you're negotiating a loan modification, you've sent in your documentation, they told you that you should just wait, you're being reviewed, and then all of a sudden they foreclose on you because one side of the bank is not talking to the other side of the bank.
So it just seems like they didn't have the infrastructure in place to really deal with the way they set this up.
Right. They definitely didn't. And the Treasury Department has been very clear about that. This whole program is kind of set up to kind of set up a streamlined system to allow them to kind of speed things up, as opposed to, you know, someone applies for a modification, you have to look at their whole kind of situation and decide, oh, how much do they can they afford or whatever. And this program kind of gave the servicers, you know, they called like a mod in a box type thing, where you just put these numbers in, it'll spit out an answer, this is affordable, and then, you know, it takes a lot of the thought process out of it. But they couldn't even handle that. They definitely didn't have the systems needed to do this back in 2008, 2009. But what is even more striking is that we're 2 years since the program was launched, and some of these same problems are still with us.
I know you guys collected a lot of data. Why did you decide to report that in charticle form instead of doing a deeper analysis of it?
Well, we did plenty of number crunching along the way with the data that we gathered. But I think in general here at ProPublica, what we find is that the numbers that are most interesting or useful to us aren't always the numbers that are most interesting and useful to everyone. And so, you know, often people take our numbers and do something with it that we hadn't thought of, or, you know, we may not want to zoom in on the, you know, Missoula, Montana housing market, but somebody else might want to. And so they can use the tools that we provide and do that.
And what was the most interesting finding?
I think one of the most interesting things that we found is that there is enormous variation in the performance of different servicers. If you buy the argument that the problem is just too big and the program is just too hard to execute, then it becomes hard to explain why some servicers you know, have closed twice as many mods as other servicers. And I think that, if nothing else, is, you know, a pretty good rebuttal to that argument.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Did this one show which services were performing best and worst? Or
We did a breakdown, which we thought homeowners in particular would find useful because, you know, if you're at Citibank, you know, your experience might be different from if you're a Bank of America or whatever. And so we're able to do a breakdown by each of the top eight servicers that is information that we think is more useful to people than kind of overall type information.
Well, and one of the ironies of it all also is that Bank of America, which is the largest servicer, is the one that seems to be having the most problems executing HAMP. So if you want to stitch it up in one sort of poignant detail, I think that's a good one.
Now, your last piece examined the potential reforms, and you noted the lack of enforcement mechanisms. But the thing that really struck me was that there are so many different agencies that are working on reforms, from Treasury Department to State Attorney General, Federal Reserve, on and on. How could any of them ever come to some kind of coherent agreement on what needs to be done?
It'll be interesting, is the short answer. I mean, it's what happened was, you know, these problems have been with us for quite a while, and it wasn't at all apparent that there was going to be meaningful action taken. But then in the fall, all this stuff came out about the robo-signing, these foreclosures that were going forward, with essentially false declarations that the paperwork had been checked out and certain things that you needed to declare before the court were wrong. And so that kind of created an emergency where it was before it had just been, you know, a big problem. And so that led to the 50 state attorneys general launching this big investigation. All the federal bank regulators got on board. Federal agencies like the Federal Housing Administration got involved. And so it became like this massive investigation where they're all rooting around inside the servicers and finding problems. And it became a bigger thing than just about these foreclosure problems. It became about the modification process as well. So you have a lot of moving parts, for sure. What I wrote about in the piece last week was kind of given a sort of idea of the timelines. It seems like they're trying to come to some sort of agreement in the next couple months. This is just the settling these big claims, the foreclosure problems, which might lead to big changes in the process, maybe as early as this summer or being phased in over time.
And do you think the banks will acquiesce to some kind of enforcement system, paying fines or?
Well, it's essentially that the question here is, so they've broken laws in the way they foreclosed on people. So they would settle here in order to avoid the prospect of being sued by all 50 states and going to court and ending up with whatever fines might result from that process. And on the other side, the attorneys general are trying to come to some sort of meaningful resolution that they think will substantially improve the situation right now. And one big thing they're occupied with is maybe finding some way of forcing servicers and banks to invest in their modification operations in a way that they haven't, the way we reported about, you know, making it so that you have well-trained people, that there's adequate people, that, you know, when you fall into difficulty, you get like a letter from your bank and says like, your officer is Joe Smith. Here is his number. Here is his email. He will deal with you through this whole process. They have kind of a wish list of stuff they want to happen.
Do you get a sense that the services are already fighting some of these proposals?
They are. Yes, there's been kind of a general like, whoa, hey, reaction. Most specifically to this idea that the attorneys general want them to consider writing down principle of people who are in trouble. And if there's been a lot of even public pushback from the banks arguing that, hey, if we start giving people breaks on their principle, then that will lead to moral hazard. Everybody will want, you know, a break on their mortgage principle, and then everybody would be defaulting. And I mean, one irony of that being that this is an argument coming from banks that exist because the government rescued them.
One thing that I think is worth pointing out is just that though there are reforms underway inside HAMP, for many people, it is in fact too late.
So, Olga, if they are able to make some of the reforms, will it really make a difference for people?
For people going ahead, it sounds like it'll be a kinder, gentler experience. Unfortunately, most of the people who are eligible for HAMP have sort of moved through the process already. New applications to HAMP are dwindling. And many people have already, you know, left their homes, mailed their keys to the bank and given up or been foreclosed on. And for those people, for many of those people, it's too late. They didn't get the help that they needed and were eligible for in some cases and asked for.
Well, you guys have done a terrific job on in reporting on this, so thanks a lot for joining us.
Thanks.
That was Paul Keel and Olga Pierce. You can see the entire series, our chart of the performance of mortgage servicers, and all of our coverage at ProPublica.org/loanmods. And now for our official Say the Darndest Things Tumblr quote of the week. Here goes. It's not that we don't want to help troubled borrowers. It's a moral hazard issue. Who said it? Bank of America executive Terry Laughlin on why the bank is opposed to reducing outstanding mortgage debt for struggling borrowers. Many people pointed out that the U.S. government's bailout of the banks, including Bank of America, also created a moral hazard by rescuing institutions that took on too much risk. Okay, that's it for this week's podcast. Thanks to Minnie Cho for producing it. For ProPublica, I'm Mike Webb. We'll see you next week.